Welcome to Invasion of Privacy. I'm Kate Wolf, and today I have guest Eddie Amato is here. Hi, Eddie.
Hey, Kate.
And I met Eddie, so I'd heard a lot about Eddie, but I met you officially, I guess, about 2 weeks ago at the All School meeting, which
Incredible.
I had, yeah, it was amazing. We can recap that a little bit later. But the first topic I want to get in with you is public education, because you are a teacher. How long have you been a teacher for?
I've been teaching high school for this is going into my sixth year.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so tell everyone what you teach.
I teach technology and engineering.
To what age range?
To high schoolers, so 9th through 12th grade.
Do you like teaching that age?
I do. I really do. I feel like my heart is in elementary
really?
Age kids. Yeah.
Okay.
Part of working at the high school, and we have occasional meetings with other technology and engineering educators in the area, which is really great because you can connect and explore different ideas and who's working on what and what's the newest
yeah.
Project or technology that's being integrated into a classroom. And somebody had approached me about this opportunity to teach technology at a camp. And when I thought of camp, you know, I thought of like the day camp that I went to as a kid.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know if I want to be a counselor. He told me a little bit about it. So it really piqued my interest because it sounded like it just sounded incredible. I
yeah.
mean, the camp is called, and I checked in with the CEO I was gonna like, hey, you know, I'm gonna be podcasting later. Is all right if I talk about the camp, because it's really
good
extraordinary
for you for
what
asking
doing.
First. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to honor that. Yeah. So
I think it's good because some people, you'd be surprised, right? Some people who are like, you mentioned my name on a podcast
right,
or my business,
right,
but
right.
I like the businesses that are down for it because it's great publicity.
Totally. Totally.
So yeah. Sorry. Keep going.
Yeah, so this guy was telling me about their classes and stuff they were being offered at the camp, and it was like build and fly your own drone and like 3D printing and laser engraving and etching and cutting and...
Sounds fucking awesome.
Oh, man. Yeah, they have a thing with like... they built these like skateboarding ramps, and they do this whole skateboarding class. There was like a pro skateboarder
yeah.
that was teaching for a while kids how to ride, and the kids even built their own skateboard. It was really neat, and then they learned how to ride it. It's just awesome.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, I teach four different classes this session. I work both sessions. Aeronautics. We build and fly model airplanes with the kids, and even like these like quadcopters that are remote control is really neat. And Rube Goldberg machines.
What are those?
It's like it was this cartoonist, Rube Goldberg, and he would draw these like crazy contraption like machines, lots of processes to complete a very simple task, like getting a ball in a cup or like turning a light switch on. But it would go through these like 10 or 12 different processes that were like raising levers and, you know, like seesaw like motions and pulleys and things, dominoes, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And just to complete this task. So the kids are like highly engaged with problem solving and creativity. And it happens like in this very organic way, which is really
yeah.
neat. And also, I'm doing this. It's a programming class called Scratch with these robots called MBots. And the Scratch is the software, and very user friendly, kid friendly. These like folks at MIT put it together and made it very accessible and available for children. It's free. And I teach a bit of that and stop motion, which is pretty neat, like movie making. So the idea of like capturing moments frame by frame and then playing them together to create this like motion, like a Gumby, you know, classic cartoon or whatever.
Yeah.
Things of that nature.
There was that one, what was it? Something in Gromit. Do you know what I'm talking
Wallace
about?
And Gromit.
Wallace
yeah,
and
yeah,
Gromit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of stop motion pictures and all, you know, the claymation and all that kind of stuff. I think it's so cool that you have such a range of skills, and that you take all of them and are such an active, you allow your students to be active learners, because that's something that I found in the public school system annoyed me the most, was the amount of teachers that were not utilizing that, where a kid goes, they sit at their desk and they just get lectured at.
Ugh.
No one's really good at learning that way. There has to be movement. You have to get up and actually apply process. So what I like that you're saying is that these kids are really engaged and motivated to learn these things. And you're teaching such a range of things as well.
You know, the camp came to me at this time in my life where I was really starting to try to come into my own with my own style of teaching and pedagogy in the high school. And after the first year or two, I mean, I'm fresh out of like teacher school, right? And mm-hmm. and very familiar with lesson planning and all of the, what would you say, like the proper protocol, you know, for delivering a lesson and things of that nature. But I found that like when I came into the job, I mean, nothing prepares you like just to be like in it, you know, like when yeah. you're in it. And I remember like the first day of school, my first day of teaching, I remember putting so excited to put like my set of keys, like I'm my own set of keys and put the key in the door. And I walk in, there was a flood in the classroom.
Are you
like,
serious?
Yes, like a huge, huge pool of water right in the middle of the room. And, it was just an interesting way to start. But, As I started to learn the lay of the land and what it really was I was going to be doing as a teacher, I started to find that there was something like, I don't know if it was inauthentic, but something that I was like programmed to know and a way to be that served its place well in college, you know, and coming into like even doing like my demo lesson to get hired. I think it very much has its place, but I found that I would spend a lot of time grading, right? And I would mark up papers and I would try to deliver an offer, like good feedback, you know, whatever mm-hmm. it might be to the students, because I feel like that's important, right? But when I would return the paper to the kid, they would look at the number that was in the top right corner and then shove it into a folder into their backpack, and they never saw yeah. it again. So I'm like, what the hell am I doing? You know, yeah. like what's really going on here? And the more I started to dig deeper, it seemed like the only thing that mattered in public school, the only thing that really mattered to the students was the grade. And
which sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
I'm not against grading 100%, but that can't be the main
totally
motivation.
Has its place. It totally yeah. has its place. But for some reason it was hitting me in such a way where it was, you know, it was like right in front of my eyes. The only thing I was seeing was just this attachment to, doing whatever it took, really doing the bare minimum to get the maximum reward, which yeah. was in this case a number, you know, for the child. But yet they're like missing all that good stuff in between, you yeah. know, like I felt like students were more or less walking away with knowledge of how to skate by without actually maybe embodying the work or learning it in such a way where you know it. You know, like you really know.
Well, what you just said is so, and I did Dragon Sorcerer last
sure,
night and
yeah.
a comic kind of touched on that is like, and not just grade wise, but like also just trying to survive wise, like just kind of barely getting by, you know, and that is a skill to learn, but it's like after a while, like you don't want to just survive, you want to thrive, right? So it's like we're teaching kids to just like, you know, cross their fingers and go, oh man, I hope I can get through this year, instead of actually entering that building excited. Although I'm sure for your class, it sounds like at least they have some beats throughout the day to keep them going. And I think we all had that. Like for me, it was art, right? Mm. So like, thank God that there are some things still that have like what feels like a pulse to them. But these kids should not be just being like, how can I, what'd you say, skate by? How did you say it? Like, what was the phrase?
It just seemed like
skate by.
Yeah, skate by. Like it just, yeah. Like it's almost like they got away with something as
yeah.
opposed to
yeah.
taking advantage of what's available. Like, you know, like pick the teacher's Amen. Mind, like put, call them on their stuff. You know,
yeah.
I feel like that's what, I mean, what greater gift, Kate, like as an art teacher, did you have when you had a student in your class who's hungry for yeah. what you had to offer, you know, or
it was awesome.
Or interested.
I used to tell the kids stories.
Right on.
I'd be like, let me tell you why you wear a helmet when riding a bike. Like, and I would go, so even if it wasn't the art thing, like, when they wanted to hear and connect, it was so fun. I had to leave for many, many reasons, but I did love the connecting with the kids and especially the ones that were hungry.
The connection is what lasts.
Yeah.
You know, and that was something that I learned from, oh my gosh, I had this wonderful colleague. Her name is Carol, and she was totally like, I mean, I would, there were good days and bad. I would go to her and I would let her know everything, you know, and I really trusted her judgment and I felt very safe and comfortable to be around her and honored her perspective. She really loved what she did,
yeah.
you know, and loved the kids. And, it's what lasts.
Yeah.
I, and that's what she helped me to learn so fast, like so quickly.
Yeah.
And it made so much sense that the thing that's going to stand the test of time is the connection and relationship that you had with, and yeah. those crazy moments or those, whether they're heartfelt or what have you, that you, the experiences that you had in the classroom or with
yeah.
the teacher, even if it was just one-on-one after class, when you were seen or heard
yes.
or like, you know, where I feel like the magic happens. Like that's. Where like the learning took place. I mean, a big time, yeah. A big thing for me while I was growing up in school is well, I loved connecting with my teachers and getting past like that teacher student threshold to a point where you're two like human beings sharing a conversation or like talking about what felt so real. I mean, there are times
yeah.
in the beginning of the school year where I'll share with my students like we're kind of playing this game together. You know, I got up this morning, I put on my shirt and tie. You know, I showed up here and I'm playing teacher. I'm playing the role of teacher. Like you guys got your, you know, your threads and you're coming to school and you're going to play student.
Yeah.
Right? But like how do you want to play this game? You know, there are high scorers and low scorers. There are kids who figure out the cheat codes, right? And you don't need every gold star to get to the next level, you know, but some kids go to like the game store and buy the book so they can get every
Yeah.
gold star, you know, or whatever it is for the game to before they get to the next level, you know. I offer the opportunity for the students that if they want to play it differently or they have a better game but can still, you know, I can still justify that there's learning taking place, like by all means, you know.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. And it made me think of just impressions in general, impressions, and it ties into connection where it's like even starting really young, whether it's in a classroom or just an aunt and uncle or someone who just really speaks to your soul, right? And not just speaks to it, but you feel safe around and things like that. They make an impression forever. And it's random moments too, like you're saying, an after school club, just someone showing that kind of care and concern for your soul and your being, it stays with you. And,
totally.
Oh, what's that? Is that your phone?
That's my phone ringing in the other room.
For a second, I was like, is there a spirit in here? Like, I love that's where my mind, because it was like a faint sound at first. Oh, I can still, should we just let it go?
I'm
or
sorry.
Do you want to go get
should
it?
Should I just go silence it?
Do you want, I mean, you can let it play out.
All right, we'll let it play out.
Yeah, it's fine.
It'll be over soon.
Yeah, yeah. But it's so funny. I feel like that happens a lot too in like spiritual school. And it kind of happened at a couple moments in the weekend where it's like, someone will say something and then like someone's phone with like angel chimes will start to go
yep.
right at that time.
Yep. Or like what's like your GPS say? It's like rerouting or like something like, I remember like that came up in class one day. Like we were like hysterical, you know, it was like, and it always happens to find like the perfect moment
yes.
where it's like
yes.
totally a sign from something, you know? Or
yes. Well, Eddie and I actually, we got Chipotle beforehand and I was telling a story where I was telling the story about when I took that edible when I was on deep inside the
right,
rabbit hole
right, right.
and spiraled. And I was saying how when I went outside, I just wanted to scream at the top of my lungs because at the moment I was like, nothing matters. This is all an illusion. So let's just scream. And as I was saying it, a little girl right behind me like screamed out of nowhere. And I was like, exactly.
Like on the top of her lungs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just funny because like just so many synchronicities keep popping up. For those of us who are waking up, it's just everywhere. Anyway, do you want to talk more? Because we can go into so many
yeah,
topics.
No, well,
what
I
do
was,
you want to say?
I was going to thread it back to because I was speaking to like the the focus in the classroom on the number, you know, or the average, right, in the grade.
Yeah.
And I mean, I even had a professor in college who was like, if you want the A, he's like, you can have it. Now what are you going to do?
Oh, interesting.
You know, so like I kind of take
make
that.
Learning fun, everyone.
Yeah.
Whoever's a teacher, make it
or make it real.
Yes. Well, yeah. Both.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'm totally a goofball. And if I can learn while having fun, that's the way I want to learn, you know?
Yeah.
But, in my experience and trying to be as authentic to myself as possible,
I'm going to need you to hold the mic.
I'm new here.
You're good.
I try to create an authentic learning environment, right? And what is that? You know, or what does that look like? And I found that if we're going to keep chasing this number, I felt at the time that that's going to have to change. So there was something that took place where the superintendent wound up outside my classroom, right? And I had stopped to the students were working on a project, and I took a moment to step outside and talk to him, and I let him know how I felt, just kind of like what I told you about how I felt about the number. And
good for you.
He's got this tablet in his hand, and he like pulls up like the code of conduct or something for like the teacher handbook, and he was like, "Eddie, there's nowhere in here that says that you have to do this or that. I mean, you have to give them an average, right?
Yeah.
But like how you want to get there, he was kind of like, you know, it's relative, you know. So I didn't know anything about standard-based grading until after this conversation I had with the superintendent. It was well received, because not shortly after I found myself in one of the AP's office, the assistant principal's office, and he was like, you know, would you be interested in going to St. Louis for a conference on standard-based grading? And I was like, yeah, you know, sure. Wow. Like it felt like an honor, you know, and you know, he let me know that it was the conversation that I had with the superintendent was the reason why this opportunity had come about. So, standard-based grading, just briefly, it is a way to assess growth in a more intimate and in my opinion, a meaningful way. It's kind of like your rate. Like I put standards in my grade book, and one of those standards, are you familiar with standards? Like the artistic standards for like,
I used to be like, but honestly, yes. Like, and I would go through them and I would be like, oh, it's good to see, to make sure you're hitting those beats, but I'm never one to like the rigidity of some of those things just makes my soul so angry.
Right.
So it's like I couldn't pay too much attention to them, but I made sure I hit all the, I had to do lesson plans and make sure that they were hitting those standards.
Right, right, exactly. So, but like, so the standard
I was
is like
duh. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I know how to fucking teach. I know how to
just
connect
to this.
Kids.
Yeah,
exactly. I got this. Right. But I've always been, you know, a little like.
So standards, just very quickly, it's basically like what we teach to, you know, it's like student will be able to, and then fill in the blank, you
right.
know, whether it's, and the standards that I play with are like, you know,
I feel like any good teacher already knows those innately. Don't you think?
I think yes and no.
Okay.
You know, I think yes and no. I think they have their place, and they're
right.
a pretty good guide, you know, if they're structured
yeah.
the right way, or if you decide to teach to them, but, yeah.
No, they do have a place.
Totally.
I'm just,
yeah.
I'm just reacting. Because once again, the public school system for me pushed me out because I didn't feel free enough. But I think you're finding more freedom
than I did.
Trying
to find a balance.
Yeah.
You know, because it's definitely something I wrestle with. But, you know, I'm not interested in leaving what I've started. You know?
I think you're killing it. So I don't think you should be leaving. Right now, like, who knows what your future holds, but
yeah,
you seem to be.
It's like whatever it is that I'm cooking here is not cooked yet.
And
I'm interested to keep it going, you know? But, again, just like for the sake of this, because, the standard, it's what we teach to, student will be able to contribute to a group conversation in a meaningful way is like something that I'll assess. So what it allows for is freedom for the students to be able to prove to me that they have learned something if they want to to sing about it. They want to dance about it. They want to write me a poem about it, even though it's technology education.
Yeah.
You want to build about it. You want to make a clay model. Whatever it is that's your thing is what I try to hone in on. You know, it's kind of a daunting task. Like, it's a bit, you know, it's like, it's funny because you bring up like things like passion into a department meeting or into a faculty meeting.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting in my middle school placement at this middle school district, and we were in a department meeting together, and it was just when I was getting, like, you know, still way wet behind the ears with the whole teaching thing and just getting a taste, you know, with student teaching of what it's going to be like. And I'm sitting there in a department meeting in this old, like, total, like, old school, you know, ex Vietnam vet turned shop teacher, you know, fuck their self-esteem is like what he said. And I was like, dang, like, how what, like, platform do you have to, like, why are you even doing this if that's like how you feel?
Well, no, there's so many teachers who are no longer into it, but they stay because of tenure and they feel like they don't have any other options in their life. And you can feel the teachers that are still very much excited to be there and the ones that are, like, already checked out years ago.
I found that if you get a kid that's inspired or has found something that's interested, like, they're genuinely interested in, I just have to get out of their way.
Yeah.
You know, or offer them what they might need, you know, or give them what they might need, you know, whether it's material supplies, whether it's paint, wood, whatever. I don't care. At this point, I didn't care. You know, I even kind of ran myself a little crazy this past year because I was, you know, it's, and the other thing is frustrating is, like, if you need something, I'm not sure how it was for you teaching art wherever it was. But, like, if you needed a material or if you needed a special something, the process that you have to go through to order something through the school, and then, like, the paperwork that has to get pushed around, and it's like, here it is, it's in November, and you finally caught this kid on a day where he or she is all the way there, and they're like, okay, I want to do this, and I'm going to need that. I got to go reach into my own pocket and go to the hardware store or whatever it is myself, because by the time I push the paperwork through, it's going to show up, you know, in February, you know.
A lot of teachers pay out of their own pocket.
Totally. It is a big deal. It's definitely common, you know.
And it's certainly worse in some districts than others, though.
Right. It's unfortunate. I feel like the structure doesn't necessarily have to be in such a way. And if it was a little bit more accommodating, I'm curious
what that would
offer students, you know, or possibilities, you know. Something that I want to share that I'm really proud of because of that whole that spawned of that whole standard based thing and where the hell I was getting at with that whole thing was I was teaching this robotics class, and it was a really great bunch of individuals that were in there. It's like everybody played their role, and there was such a community that was created in the room, and I really, really looked forward to this period. And there was a time where I had, you know, I was like, you know, this is my job. Here it is. Here are all the standards that I have to prove, or that the students have to prove to me that you understand when you walk out of here.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's my job to build all these lessons and projects and ideas and things for you to prove me that you've learned them. So here they all are. Like, let's be completely transparent. Here's what you need to prove me to prove, whether it's programming and using the robotics and being able to problem solve and use the design process and to come up with a solution. And this one kid, he, like, raises his hand and he's like, "Mr. Mono, it's a robotics class. Do you remember the water bottle flipping? Remember, like, that was like such a big deal, like the Poland Spring water bottle, like, filled up to here and you just flip it and toss it, and the kids would go nuts."
Yeah.
So he raises his hand. He's like, "Mr. Mono, it's a robotics class. Let's build a robot to flip a water bottle." And I thought he was, like, egging me on, you know, or, like, I took it almost as, cause, like, I can be a little insecure, in front of them too, and vulnerable. So I thought he was kind of, like, picking on me, and because I guess whatever it was that I was doing, I wasn't really doing it for him. So let's make this water bottle flipping robot. So the next day I'm like, let's do it. And they split themselves up into groups. They wrote down all of the possible standards they felt that this project would cover, which was many, surprisingly enough. Then they went and they dove headfirst into it. And I found that there was something magical happening, no doubt, because the kids were teaching the kids. The kids were, groups were asking, it was like if you were to paint a picture of what, like, classroom environments and learning should look like, I feel like this is the picture. It was students helping students. It was, they were trying and experimenting and making mistakes and going back and fixing them, which is a really hard thing to do in public school, especially when your periods are only 40 minutes long. By the time you come in, you settle down, you get ready to rock and go, you got 20 minutes to do whatever it is that you set out to do. And then you got to clean up and pack it in, and then you got to go be a mathematician somewhere else, or a historian or scientist, you know, which is kind of weird in and of itself to have things so separate. It took these kids a week. It took this one group a week to make it. They asked me how long that they had to do this. I was like, you can have the whole school year to do this project. You can take however long it needs you to do, or you know, whatever it takes. It took them a week. And not only did it take them a week, but there's a 9-second video of it that was done on a kid's Snapchat. We all got together, and it was like one of the first trial runs of this kid's robot flipping the water bottle, right? And I'm standing there, and we're all huddled around this thing, right, on the classroom floor, and they hit the button to initiate the motion of the robot, and this thing leans back. It, like, they completely captured the whole wrist, arm, shoulder, hand motion in the form of like this robot. It did the water bottle flip. It landed stuck like a gymnastics event, and the kids went nuts. They were cheering. And they one of my students, he posted it to, like, he direct messaged House of Highlights, and there it sat, that video, this 9-second video clip on this like Instagram page. It ended up showing up on World Star. It went viral that night. I was so blown away.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. I had the phone on speakerphone like 2 days later in the middle of my classroom with media licensing companies reaching out. Hey, Armando, you know, we're so and so from Europe, and we deal with, you know, BuzzFeed and Ellen DeGeneres and Tonight, blah blah blah, and you know, we want to offer you media licensing opportunities for this video, because it was exploding. And I kind of regret not doing it, but it was kind of breaking the rules with the school. To, like, I didn't want to profit off of like
sense.
A student's accomplishment, or that's not what it's about. But I was really grateful for that experience, because it showed that the students can still come through with that freedom to explore and to problem solve, like, on their terms, like on a project that they're willing to work on, you know, to thrive on.
So I want to ask you some other, I'll ask another teaching thing, but I want to get into other topics other than teaching.
Yeah.
So, but real quick, I just want to know, at what age did you know you wanted to be a teacher?
I still don't know if I want to be a teacher. you know, it's funny. I had a conversation with this in high school. My mom had come into my room, and she was like, what are you going to do? You know, what do you want to do? And I really didn't know. I had some experience with public speaking at the time, and tinkering and working with my hands was kind of like my way of life. It was like my vehicle for a lot. My dad built our house. My grandfather, big tinkerer, phenomenal with. It was so funny. My grandfather in his 70s, you know. We'd have a problem with our computer at home, we'd call grandpa, you know, to fix it and to diagnose whatever it was. You know, my uncle's a mechanic. I just grew up with a lot of opportunities for experience to construct and to tinker and to like a know-how, you know, being a handyman kind of thing. So that was very alive in me, and I loved my tech classes. I loved my shop classes. It reminded me of really fond memories of with my dad, especially when we're holding a flashlight or working with him. And it was an environment that was familiar. There was lots of tools and things that I was familiar with using. So I feel like I thrived in the tech room. So my mom was like, well, what about teaching? You know, what about teaching technology? And for some reason, it really stuck with me, you know, that notion. And I mean, at the time when I was a senior in high school, like, you know, my parents didn't go to college, and I was a little naive about the whole thing. Like I didn't know really what the common application was. And I remember all my friends like applying to schools, and I remember being like, what's that? Like the whole process, like, it didn't make sense to me. So I decided to do community college for a year or so right out of right out of school, because I was working like three jobs. My dad had a landscaping business for years, and he had sold it, but he kept all the equipment. So I made good use of it, you know, mowed a ton of lawns on my block, and I was making good money. I was working at a restaurant, and I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to get out of community college. And all of the tech teachers that I had in middle school and high school all went to Oswego. So I knew that that's where I had to go if I was going to become a tech teacher. So that was kind of like the jump off, you know, was transferring there.
All right. I need to get into other topics.
Sure.
We have to.
Totally.
Okay. And you can always say, because I think what's cool is not many teachers have come on Invasion of Privacy, because so many teachers, you have to have a certain kind of public profile in a sense.
Completely.
Yeah. So we're not going to, I'm not going to ask anything that would, seriously, I'm not going to go, you know what I mean? Because of it's going to be a different thing than if I had a comedian on, you know, we would be talking about goat porn or something. Well, actually I don't want to talk about goat porn to anyone, but, but so I just wanted to tell you that before, like, but I do want to ask because, okay, so Eddie's in the school that I'm always talking about for A Society of Souls. And what's cool is a lot of these, not just younger guys, but girls, like, are starting to enter this school. And I love the sensitivity that I'm seeing in a lot of men and how it's starting to be more cool to be sensitive. Mm. So on that note, I would just like to hear, like, in terms of even, like, not just dating, but, like, approaching vulnerability and sensitivity around love and dating. Like, I want to hear your real experience of what it's like as a man, having a crush on a person or dating. And it doesn't have to just go to dating, though. Like, I just want to hear, because men are just starting to really open up about how sensitive they are and how nervous they get and things like that. I would love to hear your experience with those kinds of feelings. And, like, a lot of people want to look cool a lot of the time, you know, and fit in. So I want to hear maybe even a struggle with, you know, the balance of wanting to be cool and look cool versus really opening up and showing your heart. I just want to hear your experience with those things.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I recently started seeing someone, and especially, you know, it's, you bring up the work with NKH, right? And you go through
that's
these
non-dual Kabbalistic healing,
and we go through these shatterings, right? And these births and deaths and so on and so forth.
So I'll explain. A shattering is basically when so much new light's trying to come in and your old system can't really hold it. You shatter, but a shattering for me, I'll say, you can explain your shatterings. For me, it's like, sometimes I can barely move. It could be a fetal position kind of thing, like where you just feel exploded on the inside. People have shatterings differently. Some people's shattering could be a drinking binge, or I don't know. People shatter differently. But what are your shatterings like?
Shatterings are kind of like everything the way, like everything that you thought the way that it was happens to just be turned on its head,
yes.
You know, or completely changed. And, so that breaks away because it's no longer it's like it's no longer the ground that you have to stand on. It's different now, and then you find yourself kind of going through, like moving through like post shatter in a way that it feels like everything's kind of anew. You know, like you're taking
that's a beautiful way of putting it.
Yeah, like you're taking things in very much a way of like the first time. So. I feel that I've gone through one relatively recently, and since seeing this new girl, I have to say it feels like dating for the first time in a way, because I've made myself I have such a desire to be present with this person and open and honest in every way that I can, because I'm finding that I really strive to live my life authentically and honestly and truthfully, and including the stuff that I don't like about myself and being aware of it and not trying to, you know, kill those parts of me off, but have a relationship with them, right? So in terms of like dating and just having this relationship, I have found that there are times where I'd be having this conversation. And there's something coming up in me that I either am nervous to share, might be a little embarrassed to share. And I found that I've mustered the courage to kind of overcome that fear and say it.
That's amazing.
And whatever, really, whatever it might be, even if it's like, you know what, I felt like there was a big build to meeting on this day. And, you know, we talked about getting together today, but I have to say that I woke up this morning and I'm feeling completely depleted, you know, low energy. I really just need to rest.
Yeah.
And I feel like an old me would have just pushed through, and then we meet and then it's terrible because I am not comfortable in my own skin at this point, and present enough for an honoring, you know, being with someone else and taking them in completely or being there. So I remember bringing this up relatively recently, and, you know, I find that when the fear shows up, you know, with whether it's sharing or communicating or like a public speaking, whatever it is, in this case, the relationship, that there's that fear that arises. And I found that after you bust through, you know, you say it or you communicate it in the best way that you can, that there is this like feather bed waiting for you on the other side. Like
sometimes it feels skipper. Yes, but I've also had where sometimes the honesty can also, not that it's not a bed, but sometimes you land a little. Do you know what I mean? Like,
sure. I mean,
you win no matter what when you're honest.
That's how I feel. I feel that's very true. You know, I mean,
what's the other option?
If you're true and you're honest, I mean, what do you have to hide? You know, you know what I mean?
No, that's what I'm saying. If you're not, and it's hard, you know, we're saying it like it's easy. We've been, so Eddie graduates in a year, the program. I just graduated. I'm continuing my education, but it's like, it is hard to truly learn to be authentic and embodied and still not just authentic, but compassionately authentic, because being authentic isn't like, well, I'm thinking fuck you, so fuck you, you know, that's how road rage really happens. It's like allowing yourself to be angry, like we were kind of talking about anger earlier, but it's like so many of us feel bad for the rage that sometimes swims through our system, and it's just like being authentic is just honoring these parts. It doesn't mean you are them or you have to act on them, but it's been really challenging for me. Because sometimes I think the rudest things in my head, but sometimes they're really funny. They're not even like rude. They're just like, and that's what I love about little kids. That little girl screaming is like, little kids, they're not as filtered as we are. And sometimes it's good to be somewhat filtered, right? So it's not like Lord of the Flies. But I want to live in a more honest society where it's like, you could just say how you feel. And it's held in a sacred space where it's like, people are like, oh, why would you say that, Cindy? You know, it's like, I don't know. I ache, and I know I'm like helping lead that with the comedy and all that, you know, of just trying to say what's really going on. But I still have a hard time always saying what's really going on.
You bring up like the like a young child, and it's so funny because the camp that I'm working at, the Discover Camp, it really nourishes that one of me that likes to connect with the elementary kids, and the big reason why is like they're not afraid to be wrong, or they're not afraid to, like, they're not so by the time I feel like they get to high school, it's like we got to unpack all this stuff that they, you know, big egos and the way that they think it is and so on and so forth. But like with the elementary school kids, like they seem so like, I don't know. I find them to be very genuine and authentic.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there's nothing better than like being like standing next to an 8-year-old who's just wide awake and like knows what they like, what they don't like. And this is what I'm doing. I drew the duck blue because I've never seen a blue duck before. You know, and
blue duck keeps coming in, and then I watched Billy Madison with Shane and my mom, and I'm like, oh, the blue duck.
Right?
Does every dude already know that? Like that the blue
for
duck,
Billy Madison.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
but
how
I
know.
I forgot like that. That's where it was from. Because I've been hearing blue duck. I think it started. Who painted the blue duck on the mural at the all school meeting? Was that you?
Good question. I'm not sure.
It might have been Ted actually, but he said blue duck, and it was like swimming. I was like, where did I hear that from? And then I rewatched Billy, and I was like, oh.
So
blue
funny.
Duck.
Oh, he did. I watched him. Oh my God. Yeah. Now I can see him. Yeah. He did draw that. I remember watching him paint it. It was awesome.
Did you paint anything on the tree?
I drew a heart, a big heart.
That's right. Cause yeah. I did a heart, and then you did a heart, and then I drew like a squirrel lizard. It was so cool to see what everyone was like.
Yeah. I did the big heart, and then I also painted with green paint. I painted my left hand completely.
Yeah.
And then I did like a handprint on there.
It turned out beautiful. So we did this
gorgeous.
Big like communal painting at this retreat
mandala,
And what's cool is, like, because there are people of different artistic levels kind of coming through. And it was neat to see even people who are more timid with art because they shut it down years ago, maybe, kind of tiptoeing up and deciding what they want to put. And I felt like you were kind of opening up to your painting and drawing, right?
My mom used to set me up with an easel in, like, the front of our house when I was a kid. And I remember, like, I used to love painting the, like, the front facade of the house. Yeah. And then it kind of, like, I drifted away from, like, the whole artsy thing. But I love drawing trucks and cars for the longest time, houses. I thought I wanted to be an architect for a while. But yeah, there's something about that. But totally connecting with that. There is something about it, about being able to express yourself, you know, through painting. Yeah. And there were so many beautiful paintings and artists, you know, like, involved in this work. It was really neat.
Yeah. And just also, like, the talent show.
Oh my gosh.
Really got to display so many people. And they're different talents that you wouldn't necessarily know just when you're, like, having lunch with everyone. It was really awesome.
What about the silent retreat? Wasn't that...
I wasn't there for the silent... Yeah, I'm not... Maybe next time. I like talking. But you know what? That's not even... I do like talking, but I actually really enjoy silence. So maybe in 2 years, I will do that one. Especially because I heard... So you did the silent retreat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't you guys, like, have an experience swimming across a lake or something? Like, that was
I swam life-changing? Like the length of the reservoir. Well, yeah, of course it was life. The whole
I think
every moment was life-changing. Like, in that.
Well,
that.
I can imagine swimming across a beautiful lake while in silent meditation, but still near really close friends. I can imagine the experience, because you're not talking and yet you're sharing this experience together.
It was really special.
And
no doubt.
And it's a strenuous act to swim across a lake and back. Sure. So you're in silence together and then doing this thing and, like, conquering this lake in a sense, but not, like, conquering in a bad way. You're doing this thing. So when I heard that, I was like, oh, well, that's something I could hang with. Well, I don't know, actually. I would be able to enter a lake in silent retreat. I don't think I'd be able to swim necessarily the full length and back. Do you ever get creeped out swimming in things like lakes and stuff? Like, do you get creeped out about, like, the animals? Or, like, I still have to, like...
I capsized a kayak in the Hudson River.
Oh, really?
And the what do you call it? The floor? Like, the bottom of the river, like, I can remember my foot touched it, and it was, like, the most, it was like quicksand, only like quick mud. And my foot would touch it, and then all of a sudden it would just get, like, swallowed, and, like, God knows what is down there. But yeah, that was, like, really uncomfortable, like, experience. And, like, the Hudson, it's like I wish this felt cleaner, you know, because it's
the Hudson's
like,
so beautiful. And yeah, gorgeous. It's so polluted, it's unfortunately.
Exactly. I don't
such
get
a
it.
Shame.
It sucks. Yeah.
Well, hopefully that's like part right of waking backyard. Up.
What's that?
Hopefully that's what's part of everyone waking up, is taking better care of our planet and
Please.
Our waters and oceans. And yeah, it drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I just want to go back into this a little bit more.
Sure.
When it comes, and we're not going to get too personal here.
Okay.
But, like, so when it comes to dating and really being vulnerable, like, is it getting easier for you as you do this work to open up? Or is it still really frightening? Like, because I feel like, and this isn't for all men, but I feel like we've taught men in our society, and women too, in a different way, that, like, you're not supposed to care so deeply, or there's something wrong with you. Do you get what I'm saying? It's like, because I believe that, like, true romance brings you to your knees. And yet I'm seeing that there's this, like, belief system that, like, if you're, and I'm not saying that you should be brought to your knees where, like, you barely feel like you can get through the day, but, like, I feel like there's this stigma, not just with men, but with women too, that if you care that much, there's something wrong with you, you know? And I've seen it with certain of my friends are starting to fall for real in love with new people. And I can see them struggling with this thing of, like, oh God, I'm opening up, but oh fuck, like, I don't want to care so much about a person where I'm, like, being seen. And, you know, if this person doesn't call me back in time or text me at this point, like, I don't want to care so fucking much. And yet that's what I think real love does. When you care about someone that much, like, they don't text back for half an hour and your stomach, you know, does a flip or something.
Yeah, I could totally relate to that.
So yeah, how are you, how's your relationship to that kind of stuff? as you do the work and as you open up more and include the sensitive being that you are and that we all are?
You know, that's okay. That's a really good question. And, I don't know that I need to like sit with it. You know, I don't know that I have like the words to like really put together exactly how I feel with all that.
Come up with a poem. Cause well, there's right now, Eddie,
do you have like a canvas? I can paint it for
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
it's, I mean, you know, stereotypes and masculinity and men who feel emasculated when it comes to feeling sensitive and maybe being afraid to really show how much they do care. It's yeah, a real thing. You know, it's a huge thing. And
same with women, but men, I think, have it a little. Like, I feel like men are especially supposed to be like, I don't fucking care, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, that might be a really bad start. Like, I mean, yes, I went a little too far in one direction.
It's like, you know, I think that a male might feel that they have to be the, you know, the protector, provider, and the rock, right? The one that you can count on if anything should ever go wrong. And I think that the biggest fear for a man might be to feel weak in front of a girl or in front of their date, you know, to feel soft, to feel like they can't live up to being that image in every moment, you know, because yeah, that's a huge task for someone to take on, to always be that way, you know, and not show vulnerability or sensitivity more readily, you know, or more often as I maybe it's just me that feels that way, but yeah.
I just have found that so much of the spiritual journey for me is allowing yourself to care about what you actually care about. I feel like my whole life, I've always thought the things that pulled me the most and that I cared about made me like a silly teenager or a silly kid, you know, because you're told those things as you grow up. Like, if you care about your Barbie so much or glitter, it's like, oh, you're just a silly kid. I know that's obviously the girl version, but who knows? Because guys, like, you know, whether it's Barbies or action figures, who doesn't like glitter? But you get what I'm saying? Like, you're taught from a young age, like, that the things you like are silly. Not every kid has that, but for the most part, it's like, no, this is what grown-ups like. This is what people who have it together are like. And then you keep thinking that that's where you're supposed to be. But I think the truth is, and this is Peter Pan shit, that like, you're excited about what you're excited about, you know, and it's okay. And we're all very frail, but also strong beings. And I think there's something about love that brings us to that place too. And we go like, oh, but I'm not supposed to feel this weak on someone, this, and not just with love, but like love for a hobby, right? Like if you get really infatuated with building something, it's like, oh, I need to walk away. I'm getting crazy. It's like, no, like you're allowed to get really deep into things. I'm not saying lose yourself completely in it, but like, it's just so interesting how I feel like this is part of the journey, is you're allowed to be into what you're into, even if it's like watching the Kardashians or makeup stuff or toy trucks. Like, you know how many dudes have like those like train sets, those like miniature models?
I had Matchbox cars. And I you know, I have such a love for cars and trucks, big time.
Well, you're
know,
also still, a mechanic. Still you're do. Also a mechanic.
I wouldn't say a mechanic. Oh, I mean, I love to work on my car. You know, I like to take care of it. You know, and I had to learn a lot. You know, to take care of it, because I really, you know, I come from that place of or in that upbringing of like we did it ourselves. You know, a leaky faucet or whatever. It didn't matter. You know, we did it. We pretty much did it ourselves. And getting back to the Matchbox cars, my father for years did snow plowing in the winter. And there was a year where I couldn't go with him. I was sick. So my mom put salt. She bought like two big containers of salt and in a cookie sheet laid all the salt down. And I had my little like plow truck with a Matchbox car plow truck with a plow. And I would push the salt around with the plow truck as if it was like snow plowing or whatever when I was a kid. Yeah. It's like a fond memory of mine. Yeah.
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 No, and I know... So, and I won't bring Shane into it because I just never, but I will bring in another kid that I know very well, who's like kind of part of my family, but he was obsessed with the Match car. And his parents were actually cool about it. They never made fun of him. They never belittled him for having this insane collection. And that's what it really is. It, like, he took care of each and every model. He knew the year, the make. He, you know, he loved the colors and the paints to them. And I think that these are things that should be cherished, like these hobbies or our crushes or our loves, like really allowing yourself to be into the things we're into. And then when you see the belief systems come up that are like, oh, I'm such a loser that I like this that much. It's like, no. Like, that was someone else's belief system that they put on me. Like, it's totally cool to geek out about whatever it is you geek out about. Like, we're all geeks on the inside for certain things. Like, own your inner geek. Like,
totally.
We're all geeks.
Weird is in. I even say that to the kids. I'm like, weird is in now. Like, if you're like, whatever it is that your thing is, like dyeing your hair or like, I don't know, like you name it. Like if you're going to do it, like go all the way, like own it, you know, make it yours. And as long as you're not taking anybody else down, like go do it. Like just
embrace your inner geek, like whatever that means. Cause I don't really think it's geeky. Like, so whatever you're geeked out about, like fucking just do it. I mean, I do have a stand-up joke where I'm literally like, what, you're not going to get that Michael Jackson tattoo you always wanted because you care about what Susan from accounting thinks. You know what I mean? And then I go into it, but it's like, for real, like, I want to see a community of people just like totally embracing who they are. And even if it's their anger, like this is not also, people who are quote unquote spiritual. This isn't about being friends with everyone and fake nice to everyone. And like, because people have that misconception and then they feel bad about themselves again. Like, oh man, like, why can't I always be happy and like Ned Flanders, you know? And it's like, no, that's not what this is about. Like, it's about just being who you are, and you don't have to like everyone. Doesn't mean you can be mean to people, but like, you're allowed to have boundaries. And I won't go too into it, but Eddie was saying, because at the all school meeting, that's when he met me, and just from hearing me on here, maybe I come off as like super friendly, which I am, but I'm also super like, I think I have pretty good boundaries, and at this point I know when I have to remove myself from, even if it's just like situations that are very energetic and I need to just take some alone time. I love that you picked up, I'll let you say in your own words, but you picked up on the fact that like, I'm just not all always smiles and talking, and like, I very much need my alone time or my space. And to me, that's part of being quote unquote spiritual, whatever that really means.
Sure. I mean, I could thank the school for honoring that, like in, like the time that I need on my to be by myself, you know, or even just like, yeah, just like the little things that you need to feel yourself, you know, and whatever comes up, you know, in your rage or in your joy or what have you, you know.
You're allowed to escape to your car if you know what I mean. Like, sometimes I need to like get out of a place and go into my car. So if I get to a comedy club early, sometimes I'll walk in, be in the green room for 10, and I'm like overwhelmed.
Right.
And I'm like, I just need to walk to my car and sit for 15 minutes by myself. I used to feel weird, and now I'm like, no, this is great.
Yeah, I guess I grew tired of like constantly forcing myself into situations that I just didn't want to be in. But because either my friends were there or people that I thought that like, listen, I really should be here to show, you know, that I care and that, you know, I love all these people, like I'm going to go. And then I go there and it's just like more damage is done than good, you know, or more harm than good, you know, for myself, you know, not necessarily to anybody around me.
But I think when we force ourselves an extent, we think we're like helping the other person.
Right.
But they're a part of that. There was a woman, Nancy, in my class. She said, don't be the cow that gives sour milk. It's like when you're extending past something, you think you're like hooking them up, but like, somehow energetically they're picking up on that sour milk.
They've got to. Yeah.
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 It's an energy exchange.
Totally. Yeah.
So we think we want people to like overextend themselves, but that's been part of my healing is like, if someone genuinely doesn't want to do something, I'm like, just tell me. Like, there might be a part that's like, oh man, you know, like you don't want to do that. But then the deeper part's like, yo, you don't want anyone to do things for you if they don't really want to do them. You don't. You know, and that's another new place that we all have to live from, because a lot of us want to like dominate or bully things into, you know, like, yeah, I could give some examples.
I have what's up in me is like my own classroom is like forcing a kid to do something they don't want to do. Like they're not going to do it. Like if they don't want to do it,
well, they won't do it well, right? If you're to do this, they'll be like,
right. And it's just like, why am I wasting your time? You know, or
exactly.
I don't know, or wasting mine. I don't know. I'm not sure what, but yeah, there's something about that. It's like, what would you rather be doing? And then, you know, but the heartbreaking thing is though, a lot of, not a lot, but there's the handful of students that would just rather be doing nothing, you know, or on their phone or whatever. And I get like like that too. Like I don't fucking do stuff all the time, you know?
Yeah.
There are
we all need our breaks.
Yeah. 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 And sometimes we need a long break, you know?
Seriously though, yeah. Like I'm seeing, so, you know, Shane has summer and he has been sleeping in a lot, and I almost feel bad that the last podcast I made a comment about it, because of course he wants to sleep in late. Like for the whole school year, he has to wake up at a certain time. He has to be in school for a long block of time, sitting in one desk, going to another classroom, sitting in another desk. It's like, of course now in this break he's having, he wants the freedom to do whatever the fuck he wants to do. So I would like to even say, I feel bad that I even was like, oh, he's becoming such a teenager sleeping in. It's like, no, teenager, not teenager. The kid deserves to catch up on sleep, and humans in general, especially if you've been working for years and years in a job you don't like, not talking about you at all, Eddie, but for anyone listening, it's like, it's going to make sense that when the weekend hits or a vacation, if like suddenly you don't feel like moving at all or getting off your phone.
I could be wrong, but isn't there like some statistic about teenagers and how long that they need to sleep? It's like over 8 hours, you know,
totally.
In order for like their developing minds or whatever. I don't know fully, but
I think it's more than eight, but yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's more than eight. And yet, like I know our school starts, with first period is like 7:30, 7:35.
Wow.
You know, it's early. Yeah. But I mean, the day ends at 2, which is pretty sweet. You know, I mean, to have like the afternoon,
that's
you
great.
Know? I mean, but I mean, there's always stuff going on after school, you know.
Do you do a lot of the after school programs?
I'm involved with, I have a class called Stagecraft, and I am involved with like the dramas and the musicals with the set.
You build the sets? Production. I used to do that as the art teacher after, but yeah, I was
build,
not very
organized. Yeah. They get a taste of it all. We have some specialists that come in for like lighting and sound, but I help facilitate like the integration between the students and the professional and the,
got it.
And that experience, you know. Yeah, it's really neat, you know. It's
do you do the paint? Do you just kind of help build, or do you paint and do the details?
I help build and organize, really, and you know, props and things of that nature. The drama is more is way more like from building from the ground up. The musical is such a huge production that we've been renting pieces, and then I'll have my students do other tasks, like other building projects around.
That's
like
incredible.
The main thing. Yeah,
what a good
neat.
Skill to have and to teach other people.
I've had a few students go on to study theater tech in college, which is pretty neat. Yeah. And you know, the other thing is too, and I think that this might ruffle some feathers, is like if you are a high school student and you don't know exactly what you want to do or what you're going to go to college to study, do yourself a favor and take that gap year.
Yeah.
Or two.
Yeah.
If you can live at home, I feel like I would recommend getting a job or volunteering or something that will and save your money. And you know, it's interesting because it's like, you know, like money does come at times, like I feel like when you need. But I feel like there's been so many instances where students have gone on to go to college and it's just the best freaking party that they've had. And then they really didn't get a chance to use everything that was available, you know, or that the university had to offer in a more authentic way, you know. And then it's kind of like that. You know, I've even had family members say, oh, it makes me, like when I would talk about my work and what goes on in my classroom, that they wish they would went back and tried a little harder, you know, in school. So it's like, why are you going to force yourself to go into a situation and pretend that you know exactly what you're doing, but you're not, you know,
or
you
pretend to like faking enthusiasm anywhere.
Oh, get that out of
but
here.
You learn that as you get older. Cause when you almost are when you don't take that gap year and you just go to college, but you don't really want to be there, like you think that that's like what you're supposed to do. Like you're supposed to be more excited for this thing that you're kind of like, You know, it's like, you don't have to live like that. Like, you can, if you're not enthusiastic about doing something, do what Eddie's saying. Like, you can take a year off to really feel into it, or two, or however long you need, because, like, what's the other option? You're going to waste time. Like, go where your heart's calling you.
Yeah. And
even if it's like backpacking, like,
sure.
Right? Like, through fucking, like, you know, Thailand, where? Asia, like, do your thing. Like, fucking live.
It's so funny because, like, I can hear someone saying, like, how dangerous that would be, or, like, how, you know, you should just just get the degree anyway.
That's, but like, old school. Like,
totally. And I think it served its purpose, and it still does serve people, right? Yeah. It's not for everybody. But yeah. I feel like if you have the opportunity to explore and inquire a little bit more within, as far as like, okay, it's time, I have to make this decision, I'm gonna go this, and then all of a sudden you know, I work in a pretty privileged town, and generally speaking, like, if I ask a class, like, raise your hand if you're gonna go to college, it's unanimous, right? And there are many who don't have that luxury of, like, mom and dad paying for their college tuition. And I feel that if you are someone who doesn't know exactly what you want to do, and you're not in that place of privilege, like, take your time, you know, because it's going to stink if you decide to go. Because, like, I remember being jealous of my friends going to schools where they get to watch their football team play on Saturday on ESPN, you know, and I went to a SUNY. You know, I got over that quick because I ended up falling in love with my school. I mean, I got to wake up at 8 a.m., go to shop class. Like, it was the best.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Go to wood shop, metal shop, and, you know, do stuff with my hands and learn, and met some really wonderful people around such creativity. And it was a really great experience. You know, I had this design professor, this guy, John Belt, and he is someone who I feel genuinely taught me how to change my mind. And the way that he was such a rogue professor, you know, totally marched to the beat of his own drum. And his lab, his studio was so unique and special. There was just stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, he had his barbershop chair from, like, his first haircut in there, and, like, from floor to ceiling, it was filled with artifacts, projects, things that were half done, things that were all the way done. You'd swing open a door, and then a pulley would raise weights from, like, the other side of the room, and you know, all these, like, paper chandeliers, and it did not look like a classroom or like a lecture hall. He was so heavy into design and nature and like, designing for good and for all of humanity. Really taught me and gave me a lot of what I've tried to integrate into my own teaching style and into my own school and where I work. You know, I give him a lot of credit for that.
That's great.
So yeah.
I had a professor. I took entomology, which is a study of insects, and I had this one professor who was so into it that you had to get into it. Like, I remember it was so random that I fell in love with studying insects. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I never, like, going into it, I was like, okay, I have to take a science. And I had, like, five things to choose from, entomology. I don't know. It just, like, landed there with my schedule. And he was just like, I remember he'd be up there. He'd be like, all right, let me tell you about this one kind of beetle, you know? And he'd be like, here are the mandibles. And he'd be, like, doing them with his arms and, like, pretending to eat a bug. But he was, like, in it. And, like, I remember how excited I got into insects. And I remember my dad being like, what? You're, like, loving entomology? And I'm like, yeah, like, the teacher's so passionate and it's so real that you, like, fall in love with it because he has fallen in love with it. And, like, that's the kind of thing is, like, you can't, once again, fake what you're in love with and what you're really into, because, like, we feel it. We're all vibration, you know? So when you have someone, even if they're into insects, it's like, if they are genuinely so into it. It's kind of like a Steve Irwin with animals. Like, he was so,
oh my God, yeah,
excited that you got excited too. I mean, we all should be excited about animals, but you get what I'm saying.
Totally.
Like, my friend Tina, she's an incredible interior designer, and I call her an architect, even though she's not technically an architect, but like I can fall in love with any room through her eyes. Like if I'm with her and she's like, I like she picks up on things that I would maybe miss. Like, oh my God, look at that tile. That's 1950s. And I'm just like, oh, whoa, like she's right. Like that's unreal.
It sounds like someone who really knows their stuff, like really embodies their work.
Knows it, but yeah. It's
and knowing loves it
from
it, right.
an embodied, yeah. Like, because some people know things, but when the love's not there anymore, it's like Bueller.
Yeah, oh, totally, Bueller. Totally. Yeah. That's the best when you got a teacher like that who's just, it's just their craft, it's their stuff, and like
they
here,
love it.
Here it is in like upside down and sideways, you know?
But see, I love art, obviously. It's like all throughout my house, but I started not loving teaching art towards the end because I didn't feel the freedom to go about it in the way that I wanted to anymore. So my own love became extinguished in a sense. Like I just started picking up painting again a year and a half ago because when it becomes something that's forced, you know, it's hard to be excited about something when like you have to do it. Like you want to feel like the freedom to pursue what you want to pursue. And there was just something about the curriculum and the schedule. And sometimes I would teach like 5 or 6 classes a day, which maybe you have to do too. I don't know what your schedule's like, but like I can't repeat. Like if I have to repeat a lesson more than once, I can repeat it once maybe in a day. But like after that, I'm just like, all right, guys, this is Kandinsky. This is, you know, this is his deal. Like, you know, I can't.
It's interesting you bring that up because I feel like our school is in a bit of in the midst of like a bit of a renaissance. And something that we're taking a look at in a major way is our bell schedule, because the time, like I was saying earlier about like the time it takes to dive into something in 40 minutes. And then, you know, in the field of technology and engineering, it's like, I want to give them, I want to give these kids opportunities to create, you know, and to build. And that process is not exactly done in 40 minutes. And it's also not exactly done at the same time during the day, every day.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes you don't feel like it, you know, or some, like I remember there were times where I'd be up to like the hour, like the wee hours of the night and then early morning in my professor, that design professor's in his studio, he used to leave the keys unlocked. Like he would leave the place unlocked. And we would be hanging out in there like 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, but we'd do cool shit, you know, like make cool stuff.
If kids want to learn, humans want to learn, if it can be exciting.
Right.
Seriously, like we all, no one wants to be like, in that vibration. Like a lot of us have it in us to stay up till 2 a.m. if it's doing something.
Totally.
We fucking love. And if we're surrounded by people that what would be the word? Like excite us, just make us.
Exactly. Like the community, there's like a sense of community there.
Community's huge.
Like kind of like striving for the same goal, right? Whatever that is.
Even if the goal's like, go fucking do you. Right. Once again, I hate to keep shouting out the all school meeting because it sounds nerdy. I guess this is what I geek out about. It was the community and the freedom. And like there were so many, like just that art room, because there was a moment where you and I both ended up in the art room and I was fucking like DJing it. Like I was, remember we were just playing whatever songs kind of came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the kind of freedom. Like people could just wander in and out of that art room at their leisure. And I feel like that's the vibe of the 2 a.m. thing is like, if you're just allowed to go in a room when you want, there's no, you don't have to pick up anything ever if you don't want to.
Right.
But just that freedom to like, and then that room, there was painting, multimedia. Like we just, I can't even imagine having a shop at my whim, I guess I would say. I would need training to do things like welding. You can't just fucking, you know, you could burn off your whole hand.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
But I love, like, that is a dream for so many. Like, you could even, you could probably do some crazy jewelry making with those skills.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I'm sure that's not your number one passion, but the rings that you could make, like some you could make some fucking brass knuckle shit. Can you imagine wearing brass knuckles to the next all school meeting, but they're like loving you would never use them.
It's non-dual, just like,
non-dual brass knuckles. Yeah.
Healing knuckles.
Yeah. Healing knuckles.
Yeah, there was something that was up in me when we were just talking about like flow state, like reaching like that when you're in that creative space and you have that time and you kind of get lost in your project. And I was looking in this book, it's called Generation Z, and it's like speaking to like the millennial population and like this notion that there's like 5 different generations that are going to be working shoulder to shoulder and out there in the business world currently, you know, and like that interesting dynamic between young and old and fresh and old. It's like you got the old school guys that are in there that have been doing this stuff since, you know, it was invented or whatever. Yeah. They know it inside out, upside down and backwards. And then you get the new school in the technology that's trying to make whatever that is completely effortless, right? Or simple, rather, you know, or collect data with it. And yeah. But there was, I digress, there's something about that managing flow. And something I wrote down was like, with that flow state, the balancing level of challenge and skill required to perform a task.
Interesting.
Right? So if challenging does not fit our abilities, we end up anxious or bored. Right?
That's true. Yeah, you have to have a certain amount of challenge or almost like positive resistance in your life to feel even motivated to move forward.
Right.
Thank you for bringing that up, because that's in all areas of life. If something becomes too predictable or too, I don't want to even say dull, because that's like a, not, but you know what I mean? Like it has
if it's boring,
to be. Yeah, if it's boring, it's boring. Right. And we can't fake, you know, you can't fake enthusiasm.
For sure.
You can't do it. But we actually have to wrap it up. I just looked at we have to wrap it up.
Cool.
Can people find you, Eddie? Because I know you're not really on social, like where, I know you have a website coming, so let's definitely.
The website is under construction. It's in early stages, very early stages of construction. I don't have an address to give you right now.
You don't even have it? Okay, I'll have to add it to the description later.
I have an email address and a phone number that I'd be willing to give. My email is edamato, E-D-A-M-A-T-O, 13@gmail.com. And my phone number is 845-596-6434. Yeah, reach out for healing. I'm in supervision right now, and you'd get a good rate, that's for sure, you know, especially being new into the practice.
Yeah, so cool that you're like, yeah, you're now entering where you're giving the healings and stuff, so very cool.
Oh, also, can I also do like another plug?
Yeah,
I have a younger sister, her name is Danielle, and she is this rock star seamstress, designer, fashion. She works with like Brooke Shields and in this firm on like in Manhattan on Fashion Avenue. She's like unreal. And she, like, we have people coming in and I'm living at home right now. She's got people coming in and out of the house for alterations. She's doing a wedding dress for somebody. It's like her second or third wedding dress. Anyway, so if anybody needs alterations or something handmade or created, she's got a website. I forget what it is off the top of my head. She's gonna kill me, but you can reach out to me and I'll hook you up or set it up
amazing. I love that she does that, and I love that you're looking out for her.
Totally. She's no joke. Yeah,
no, she sounds it. Yeah. Like, okay. Me, kwolf27@gmail.com, if you would like a healing. I'm trying to think what else. The next Dragon Sorcery is August 29th at New York Comedy Club. Promo Dragon for $10 tickets. Check out my album 1111, and you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at The Kate Wolf. Thank you guys so much for listening. Eddie,
thanks.
Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Awesome. Thanks. All right, bye.